Well, we're literally at the quarter past of the hour. I don't know whether we'll get anybody else come in, but they can come and just join in as we go along. Afternoon, everybody. Disappointing. I know it's late in the afternoon. Good afternoon, everybody. That's better. So, last session of the day. I know that I'm between you and drinks and all the rest. Actually, you're between me and drinks. We'll look at it that way. So this is going to be extending your data center to the cloud. I just thought I'd spell extending wrong then, but no. We're going to be talking about how we can take your on-premise infrastructure, start to leverage some of the Azure services, but do it in a way that makes sense, take some of the little bits at a time, and how you can start to adopt them. So, quick bit of introductions. My name's Steve Beaumont. I'm an MVP in the System Center Cloud and Data Center Management arena. I'm also Product Development Director at Power On Platforms. We're a UK-based System Center specialist and automation company. My Twitter handle's on there. Please feel free to follow me. More followers, please. I've also been lucky enough to work on some of the System Center cookbooks with PackT. So along with some of the other authors, Service Manager, Orchestrator, and recently Operations Manager. I'm also a member of the CloudOS community in the UK. Now, it's been a little bit quiet of recent. We're going through a refresh, but you'll start to see a lot more content coming out of us. So, a lot of the time we hear people saying, quick, run, shift everything, move it all up into Azure. It's a much better world. It's a cloudy world. It's this magical place. Put everything up there. You don't have to worry about anything anymore. And it kind of concerns me when I do hear people just say, yeah, you don't have to worry about managing stuff. It's in Azure. It's Microsoft, look after it. Not in my opinion. We still have things that we have to think about, and we'll talk about some of them. And a lot of the main focus for the cloud so far has been around IaaS. So let's run your VMs someplace else. Platform as a service. Well, let's run your apps somewhere else and let somebody worry about the infrastructure. Or software as a service where I really don't know or care, I just want to be able to log on to something and use it from a user perspective. But it's pretty much not a case of just chuck everything over the fence. It still needs managing. IT needs managing, full stop. So VMs, no matter where they're running, what the services they're delivering, they still need that tender, loving care. We need to know what they're running, how well are they running, are they performing well, are they configured well, are they secure? And how do we go about controlling the change in that environment as well? We still need to have some form of process if we're rolling out patches, if we're doing anything, basically. And how resilient is your infrastructure in the event of a failure? If we do lose a VM, is the service still going to continue to run? How well will that scale as well over time? More importantly, where do we start? We're not all lucky enough to be a brand new company and we'll just put everything up in Azure. We have this legacy infrastructure. We have, I say legacy, we have infrastructure that we're rightly very proud of. We don't want to just lift and shift everything just because somebody says. Right. So let's take some little steps first. A lot of people are getting very comfortable with this idea, and that's moving, well not moving, extending your Active Directory infrastructure into Azure Active Directory. Hands up, everyone that's using Office 365 or some sort of services. I'm not lucky enough to have glow sticks in the room today, so it's a bit dark, I can't see everyone. So, them users that have already got Office 365, you should already have Azure Active Directory services in place. We're going to talk a little bit about how we can use Azure AD Connect, what that gives you. But it's not just a replacement for Active Directory. I'm not going to be using it for authenticating servers, not going to be doing Kerberos or SPN lookups, but we can leverage it for our user authentication. So as we start to see more and more of the cloud apps being used, perfect example is what I might show in a minute, is Twitter. That's nothing to do with our infrastructure, but if we have a corporate account, how can we control access for people to our corporate Twitter account? Well, we can start to leverage Azure Active Directory and grant rights through into it. Windows 10 is going to bring further usage. We're getting features like Azure AD Join for devices, the ability to actually have users go out and basically get a laptop from the store, join it straight into Active Directory from across the internet, and even starting to look at features like having the device information synchronized back into our on-premise Active Directory. So I mentioned it a minute ago, and that's Azure AD Connect. Now this is, an evolution of the different programs that Microsoft have had. You might have known it as DIR Sync in the past, or Azure Active Directory Sync. We now know it as Azure AD Connect. We'll do a demo on that in a second, but the Azure AD is becoming almost that cornerstone for our user authentication services. We use Active Directory on-premise for device authentication, user authentication, and then we start to hook in these different services that people are adopting. I've already said Office 365. We've got Intune out there. Visual Studio Online, if anyone's been using it, can use our work account. This is that Azure AD account. Azure obviously uses it quite heavily. And then we've got the other ones. And that one that I mentioned as well, them SaaS-based apps. So this is the likes of Twitter, Concur. It's now owned by SAP, I believe. But these are actually leveraging that platform to, rather than have to stand up your own separate user accounts for authentication in different programs, you can have one consolidated account management. Oops, before I get that. So one of the main changes that we saw with Azure AD Connect, as opposed to the previous ones, is it also made the entire process of doing Active Directory Federation services a lot easier. So whereas before it was just concentrated on trying to get accounts up into Azure, and then you'd go away and you tried to do a lot of the stuff manually for ADFS, we can now actually use this one program to try and make this a seamless process, and it'll do a lot of work in the back end for you. So one thing on this one, when you do go to open up Azure Active Directory Connect, ignore the preview bit, I'm still on the old version, make sure you do it run as administrator. We've seen quite a few times you get right to the end of the wizard, I mean literally to the end of the wizard, and it fails over. And it's purely because you've not run it as administrator. If I go and grab some credentials for this. So this is me providing it an account that has permissions within my Azure AD tenant. So this basically takes you through all the steps that's required to be able to get some of your account information up into Azure AD and, if that's on screen, the ability to actually set up that ADFS. Now, I'm not going to go through it all. I just want to show a couple of key points. So number one, you get your type of method of signing in. So password synchronization, we're basically going to pass all of our password hashes up into Microsoft's Azure AD tenant. Some people are comfortable with that. It means that no interaction comes back for authentication. The Azure AD service does that. Whereas the Federation of Active Directory Federation Services, ADFS, will mean that when a user goes to log on, they will get redirected back to the web application proxy that you host, which then funnels the information back across the internet through your DMZ, back into your ADFS servers and your domain controllers. So you're responsible for doing the authentication and the token return. So I've already got my directory information from a previous run that I've been doing, but you basically specify the local domain that you want to synchronize up. Now, one of the options we have within Azure AD Connect now, especially when you're doing some testing, is the ability to actually choose a group to synchronize up. So we don't have to upload our entire OU structure, all our different service accounts. We get a very granular feature just for that initial testing to be able to see whether it actually works. I'm going to choose that all my users are just in the one forest. And the other main thing that I wanted to point out is also this. So usually we had problems if our local UPNs didn't match what our publicly accessible names were. So if they weren't publicly rootable, for example, if in my environment I've got a lot of .locals, we could not use them. They had to be ending in .com, anything that you could register as a DNS entry. We now have the ability to start looking at easily matching it on things like mail addresses, which I'm going to say 100% of the time, I'll probably be wrong, are going to be externally accessible and routable, because people need to be able to route and send mail to us. And that will set the pivot point for the synchronization based on the mail attribute. You could choose other ones if you really wanted to. I don't think I've ever really seen much of a need other than user principal name or mail. And then we also get access to some of these new features. So this is the way that Microsoft are going to be going forward with this. It's going to be the AD Connect tool. The other ones don't easily give you access, if at all, to any of these newer features. And we can see some of the ones that are still in preview, and it'll highlight that, and then they'll come on board later on. And then the last thing to do is obviously just show very quickly. This is where we can start to specify the information regarding our setup for our ADFS. So no more do we have to go through, manually install all the ADFS roles, set up web proxies. We basically step through and give it a certificate. We give it the actual ADFS servers that we want to do be acting as that token authorization, and the web application proxy names as well. Now, the only major requirement that's going to be is around the web proxy servers. You'll want to be looking at having the WinRM ports open, because these will usually sit within your DMZ environment. And it'll need the WinRM port, you'll have to ask me later because I can't remember off the top of my head now, open while you're doing the installation for it to be able to do PowerShell remoting. So that was one of the very first little steps. One of the main reasons for that is because some of the other bits and pieces that I'm going to be using later revolve around the use of Azure and some of the services, and I need to have Azure AD in place first so I can actually do some logons. So the next step for me is around this thing called a VNet. So Azure has the ability to set up a site-to-site VPN connection that we can actually start to use to literally extend our data center. And it's not just a case then, if you've used Azure, who has used Azure? Quick show of hands. Oh, come on, there must be more than that. So if you've just used it generally and you spun up a quick trial tenant, or if you're using it within your organization, a lot of the time when you spin up your VMs, they'll either be for just an isolated test environment and you've just got your own little subnet, you can bounce information, or you're making public accessible on the internet. What we're talking about now is literally making it an extension to your data center. Say hello to your new big data center in the cloud. We can start to actually use your own IP addresses, your own ranges, and actually provide the routing from your local data center up into the cloud. I can do any usual tasks you expect. I can ping the VMs, can domain join them, control them via group policy. It literally is as if you have a great big data center in the cloud. It does mean that we need to start thinking about things like IP subnets and ranges, what routing needs to be in place on that. Now, thankfully, a lot of the gateways and stuff that we set up will handle the routing for you. I'm going to be using in the demo the Microsoft RAS service, so that, again, handles my routing for me. You can use hardware VPNs for these as well, so there's a list of different supported models, usual suspects from Cisco and Juniper, etc. And the other little one, which I can't demo because I'm not rich enough to afford an express route, is this thing called ExpressRoute. So Microsoft has partnered with various different network providers that will actually give you a much faster and lower latency connection than just purely going across the internet. So if anything does start to drive you towards looking at stuff like this, you might want to investigate and looking and working with Microsoft to get trials of ExpressRoute to see how much it increases for you. So quick demo on the VNets then. So obviously coming back from that last demo into this one, with that Azure Active Directory set up in the background, I now have all my different accounts set up and synchronized with my Azure AD tenant, which means I can log on to the portal as myself. So I'm not having a different set of credentials to manage and maintain. It is me. So underneath the Networks tab within Azure, you can see I've got some bits and pieces set up presently, one of them being my site-to-site VPN gateway. So I have it set up and we get lots of lovely feedback and information. However, going through the process of actually creating one, it is really easy. So I always choose custom create because I want to have control over what I'm doing. So this would be our System Center Universe 2015 VNet. Change your region. Choose that subscription today. And you basically start stepping through the wizard. So one of the first things it's going to ask you is, well, what DNS servers, etc., are you going to use? So while I'm initially setting this up, because I have no other services up there, I don't actually have much to use. So I'm going to enter in my local INDC01. Oops. So I enter in my local domain controller information. So this is the stuff that's running on your local on-premise. We want to do a site-to-site VPN connection. Take that's everyone can see that, can't they? Yeah. And if we had express route, it's a simple case of ticking the button. And then we start to see it building up at the bottom end. So from the left-hand side, this is the stuff that's going to sit in the Azure. This is our Azure VNet network. And then this is our local network configuration. So this is where we need to specify the information for our on-premise bits. Now, I'll come back to these domain controllers because I only generally put in the stuff that's on-premise to begin with and then alter it as we move forward. Have I missed a full stop there? Yes, I have. So, like I say, as we move across this diagram on the bottom, we're now on about our local on-premise infrastructure. So this would be my local net. Now, you should have the externally accessible IP address of your VPN gateway ready beforehand. If you don't, you're going to stop this wizard and you're going to go off and do a bit more extra work. If you're going to use, like I do within my environment, the Windows Server RAS role, you must make sure it's not sat behind a load of different firewalls or NATed, or firewalls preferably, but don't be doing NATing on it. You're going to have it with direct externally facing IP addresses. I think that's the address I'm using. And then what address space do you want to start with within your network and make routable? So that would be my range within my local network. Helps if I can find my /24 subnet. There we go. Now, you can add more to this later, but I know that that is my basic endpoint where my domain controllers, et cetera, are sat, so I'll put that in first, and then I'll work out the rest of the routing and stuff later. Like I say, probably better to actually plan this ahead of time. And then we're on to the actual address space and stuff you want to use in Azure. So this is where, when it establishes the VPN gateway, it's going to set the initial routing tables up so you can actually get back out into your Azure platform. So this is the subnets and stuff I'll be using up in Azure. Let's give it a bit more IP addresses than that, /25. And then you add a gateway subnet. So the gateways that we create afterwards require an IP address within this range in Azure, as both like it gets an external address and an internal address. It doesn't need many IPs, it just doesn't give you a lot of scope to actually change it. Create that, and off it goes. Now, it shouldn't take too long to create this, he says, fingers crossed. While it is creating that one, we'll just show you. It's not established it yet. Now, you can see I've got multiple address spaces added, because like I say, I started with my first initial data center IP range, and then started adding some of my other further client subnets. Is it okay to say Azure's running slowly? Back. So this is the one that True Blue Peter style for those from the UK I created earlier. The only thing that's left to be done after you do that base information for your VPN gateway is to actually create the gateway, as daft as it sounds. So you're creating the VNet, but it doesn't immediately establish the gateway. There's a little button that you click which will then go off and commission the gateway. It creates some forms of VMs in the background, creates the relevant information, and then you should, fingers crossed, as long as you've got everything correct, establish the actual it will come up, but this will be disconnected. That's because you get a little VPN script down in the corner. This will give you a PowerShell script with all the details regarding your gateway IP addresses that should be able to configure your VPN device for you.
So there's a few different Cisco and Juniper, or the Microsoft one that we're using. We can do 2012 R2. Generate me the file, and then it gives me the PowerShell script that I can just go now and take and run on a VM in my infrastructure that has that external IP address, and it will do all the configuration of that machine for me, install the various roles. Obviously, the ones for the hardware platform, review it, assess it with those that know the actual platforms. Well, there's some various blogs that how you can manually tweak a lot of them. So as you can see, the gateway's not being created, so we need to just use that button down at the bottom to actually create that gateway, which will then fill in that bit. If I download that script now, there'll be a load of information that are just placeholders because it doesn't know the Azure IP address and stuff that it's going to be using on it. Now, when I said earlier about the DNS servers, etc., that I was using, you can see that's the one that I've got assigned to it. I specify when I'm creating the VPN connection, originally just my internal domain controllers. So now we can actually talk back across from Azure to my domain controllers. But then I actually span up a VM in Azure on that VNetwork and promoted that to a domain controller. So this is the first extension of our data center properly into the cloud, because it means then the further servers that we tend to create up in Azure, we can point at that domain controller to stop traffic coming back across the network. In fact, if I'm really lucky, so if I go to a PowerShell prompt on my local laptop that I'm connected back across into my network via direct access, I should, helps if I click in the window, be able to ping PON Azure DC01. So this will not resolve the ping, but that's because I'm on direct access and it's not doing IP4 to 6 or 6 to 4 translation. But you can see it knows fully the DNS address. It's registered in my Active Directory. It's part of DNS. In actual fact, if I do it without the 4 and do an IPv6, I get response. So I'm now going an even more convoluted route through and going across the internet, back into my offices in the UK, back out across the internet over site-to-site VPN to a domain controller across in Azure. It is literally an extension of my data center at the minute. So cracking on, because I'm taking far too long as usual. So we've now got lots and lots of resources up in the cloud that we can use. We can start commissioning VMs, we can start using it for bursting capacity, but we still treat it exactly like it's part of our network, our domain. We can group policy control stuff, we can deploy them. But what about protecting them? Them ones that are now up in Azure, they're fine, we don't need to worry about them. Well, actually, I'd be a bit more worried about protecting them. It might be a case we don't need to worry about the actual hardware infrastructure going down. Microsoft should be able to actually make sure that they're still up and running if some hosts go down. But people still make mistakes. Somebody might log on. They might mess up some config. We're still going to want to actually look at backing them up. So regardless of whether they're on-premise or in Azure or where your infrastructure lives, we do still want to have some sort of protection. So we have a couple of solutions and services from Microsoft as well. So Microsoft have basically Azure Backup. There is an agent that you can download that's part of the backup vault recovery that I'll show in a minute within Azure that you can download, you can install on a VM, you can use either Windows Server Backup then or actually register it with the Azure service and configure your backups and protection policies in Azure and don't care where the VM lives, it could go off and sit in AWS, but we can still back it up. We can also use Data Protection Manager. Funnily enough, I can't today because my DPM server decided it will fall over just before the demo. Wonderful. And there's also a new thing that's in preview, which is Azure IaaS, can never say that acronym, VM Backup, where we can actually just go and look at any VMs that are deployed in Azure and say, back it up for me, please. We can even do offline backups now, and there's various different options, and we'll take a look at that as well. Backups, okay. However, I prefer this new thing that they've got. Well, it's not so new anymore, and that's site recovery. This is where we can start to look at them VMs that are on our on-premise and start to see how we can actually handle them for a recovery scenario and start to look at replicating them either on-premise. So again, I'm not talking about just shifting everything up into Azure, but how we can actually handle and manage them from a centralized place, regardless of where they are, and say, fine, you're being backed up, but as part of our business continuity, how can I make sure that you continue to run in the event of a failure? So we have this ability to replicate them either up into Azure, from a Hyper-V server to a Hyper-V server. We can now start to look at VMware replication into Azure. We've got physical replication. There's lots of different mechanisms, regardless of what it is, that we can use to protect our services. But I also like to have a cunning plan. One thing, backing something up. Another thing, replicating it somewhere in case something goes down. Even more cunning is the ability to say, well, actually, we've sat down and we've said, if something goes wrong, if we lose a site, we know full well that we need to bring domain controllers back up first, then maybe some SQL servers before we bring the IIS servers up. And we can actually start to map out what our business continuity, our recovery plan, looks like. We can also start to test our failovers. So I used to work in local government many years ago, and we paid a lot of money for literally what looked like a big, long horse box van to turn up with some really old kit in it that we would then run around grabbing tapes, doing restores to different hardware, spending a lot of time trying to actually get things working. And this was just for testing our business continuity plans. What I'll show you in a second, yes, you're going to want to sit down. Yes, you want to do a lot of planning. Yes, you're going to want to do a lot of testing. But when you do start to utilize it, it's as getting as simple as clicking a button and going, it works. I'm done. I'm off to the pub. So where's my browser? So still within the Azure portal, we have recovery services. So I've got two recovery services options. So what I mentioned earlier, right at the beginning, backing up in general, we have backup vault that we can create. Within here, we've got registered items. So these will be the ones which we put the agent on, maybe on-premise, and we've been able to register it with the service and start to back stuff up. Or the one that I wanted to show quickly was the Azure Virtual Machines. So that's that domain controller that I was pinging a minute ago. We stood it up in Azure, how do we back it up? Do I want to put an agent on it? Do I want to use Data Protection Manager? Or actually, I might just decide to just simply click Protect, choose a VM. I've already got policies, so the policies are like the different retention schedules, when it's going to back up. Just literally recently, so I think it was yesterday, they announced even more improved support for the whole grandfather, father, son rotation. Lots of more granular control over it, extra reporting as well. There's my schedule range. Well, I'm just going to do a daily retention for now. I wonder how many years I can go back now. I'm not going to get dragged into that now. And that's basically that VM backing up now. Fairly easy. But like we said, backing up's one thing. This is where we now start to talk about the site recovery side. So a few different options in here. So your different things that you're going to back up. So I've got all mine integrated with Virtual Machine Manager in my environment. So there's a couple of things for Virtual Machine Manager. There's an extension that you download that goes on the VMM servers. All of this is readily accessible, if I can speak today. From the main screen of the Azure Vault. So when you create a new vault, you'll get access to all the links to download bits and pieces, any keys that are needed. So there's an extension that you install on the VMM servers. It's really straightforward. It basically just asks you for some of your vault keys. And then you put some agents on your Hyper-V hosts. And then within VMM, it's as simple as going, I won't do that one. Which server shall I back up? Let's back up my direct access server, actually. We get the manage protection button. Excuse the lovely resolution that's happened down the side, but we tick the box. And that's it. Now, I've only got one replication frequency set at the minute because these are defined by the plans in Azure. So you do the configuration in Azure, that pushes the information back to on-premise, and that VM is now starting to replicate up into Azure. So if I go back to my protected items, depending on just how quick I am, nope, there it is. Oh, direct access server is now coming across into Azure. It's as simple as that. Now, I've got my schedule set to do immediate synchronization. You can start to divide it up into when's best for you. Say, I only do it at 10 o'clock at night, however you want. Some VMs will take ages. So I set these two off almost together this morning. That one's still going. That one's finished ages ago. When that one gets a little bit further, you'll see that it will try and pick a VM size that is most appropriate to the Azure sizes within Azure based on your local settings for that VM. Now, it does not create the VM. You will not see it within the portal of Azure hiding away anywhere. It's only going to start to replicate up the VHD, and then if you do any sort of failover or testing, it then creates a VM. So you're not charged by the IIS. You don't have to worry about seeing lots more junk within your setup. It's only as you need it. Now, various little bits in here, so you can start to find and discover the networks within your environment, and you can map them to relevant networks within Azure. So that is that site-to-site VPN gateway that VNet that I set up earlier. So I say that basically anything that's on my production or cloud management platform network on my on-premise, if I do any failovers, I want the VMs to come up on that. So it's still as part of my network within my extended data center. And as an example, let's pick on a server. Let's bring the map one up. So we've got two options. We can either do a failover, and that will, in a planned failover scenario, it'll nice and gracefully shut down the other VM, bring it up within my production network in Azure, carry on regardless, and then it'll do final synchronization, and bring it up. And again, if I want to fail it back, I basically click the failover button again, and it'll do it in the reverse direction. But I'm just going to be quick and do a test failover. Now, for a test failover, I actually have another network. So what I don't want is that VM coming up online in my production network, but in Azure on a different IP range and have them both up at the same time. So I have a separated network, but it's still on the same IP ranges, etc., as I would have in the production Azure VNet. Click on that, and off it goes on its merry way. I'm not going to wait for it because it comes back in a little while. So while I'm waiting for that to get a little bit further on, said I've got a cunning plan. It's this recovery plans option. This is where you go through, give it a name of your recovery plan, not 2012, 2015. So that's my local VMM server. I'm going to take it across to my Azure because you can again. This isn't just about doing everything up in Azure. You can set this up so if you have two sites with two VMM servers, you can replicate it and fail it across VMM servers. I believe you can do it across Hyper-V as well. But it handles the actual orchestration at this point. So we can start to say, well, fine, what do we want? We want that server and that server. Tick the option, please. So you're now within my recovery plan servers. What do we want to do? Well, we want to make sure that everything's shut down if we're doing a graceful failover. And we want to make sure that actually CA2, oops, going all over the place. I want C2 CA2 to come on before my map server. No, I've done it the other way around. You get the idea. You start to adjust the different orders that you want things to happen, whether you want to make sure stuff shuts down on premise first. But you also get this lovely option of actually doing scripts as well. So you can actually say, right, well, fine, we know that we just want to turn this on, but we might want to do things like refresh all the DNS entries. So we can actually add in the extra actions that we want to perform, as well as manual actions, so we know, well, actually, fine, we've got to make sure someone goes and actually powers on the backup Azure site VPN connection on the other side of the data, not that data center, a different data center altogether. But you define out what your plan is. So this is rather than just having it down as either scripts that you run on premise or just as a document that you all run around following, this will actually perform them in the steps and orders that you want. So my job for failover is still in progress. So we can see that it's actually started to create the test environment, et cetera, for me. So it does all the automation of creating the cloud service, adding it to the relevant VNet, actually building that Azure VM for you, or do it on-premise if you wanted to do it that side. I think it might be a little bit too early. Might have to have a look at it in a while. Yep. So we'll come back and double check on this, but it should create the actual cloud service and the VM, and then we can log on to it, do any manual tasks, check that it's working okay, and then we can trash it all back down again very easily once we're happy that that works. So having that ability to be able to actually test our failover practices, you do the same if you build out the entire recovery plan, you get to test it in its complete entirety as and when you want. Looking at the time, I'm probably going to be dangerously close to going over. So the next thing I want to talk about is Operations Management Suite. So the reason for bringing this in is because actually some of the next bits are actually reliant on this one. So again, I'm not going to go into massive deep dive in Operations Manager. Some very good sessions on that have either already happened, that are happening or are happening tomorrow. Check your little schedule things because I can't remember when they are, that dive into this in a lot more detail. But this is now providing a lot more deep analytics into our infrastructure. There's one or two bits that I do want to point out within it that is really good. So also now, because of the name change away from just operational insights to the management suite, is becoming a hub to some of the other systems. So Azure Backup and Site Recovery that we just looked at, they start to surface that information now within OMS. So we don't have to keep on going up and down the console, flicking over it. I can get a dashboard view of what's going on. The same with Azure Automation that I'm going to talk about. Now, this can be monitoring systems that are on-premise. We can either leverage any investments we've got within Operations Manager already, or if you don't have Operations Manager, it's a direct access, a direct client method as well for talking up to the service. So we don't really care where, again, where the VMs are sat. They can be on-premise, they can be in AWS, they can be cloud-based in Azure. We don't care. We just give it a formal connection via either SCOM or the management agent up into OMS. Now, from the UK, I've got that much Yorkshire blood in me. This next word is my favorite word, and that's free. There is a tier on this, and you can sign up without any credit cards and just look at this and manage it and utilize it. But it does have a limitation in the amount of data you can upload and the retention period. There's no limitation on the features, just that amount of data that you can store and analyze. So within the Azure portal, we have the lovely little, not being renamed yet, Operational Insights resource provider. You can create a new one from here or add an existing one. But I generally use this as now as a launch point to bring up this portal that should have been at the homepage, which is this. So this is all based on the idea of solution galleries. You can add in the ones that's most interesting, relevant for you, and then you can start to use just the ones you're interested in. Now, I tend to go through and click on absolutely everyone that's available, so my dashboard's a little bit busy. There's a new one here that I've not added, so I might as well add that as well. But it doesn't get much more difficult than that. Now, the ones that are interesting for me is we have this Azure Site Recovery. So we've just been working with this. We can see whether any of our jobs have failed. We've got the registered services, how many VMs are protected. We can see what's going on within our actual Azure service without having to go back into the portal or into the specific thing and dig down into it. The same with backup is there as well. So it's not showing me any information yet, but I have only just added that VM in to be backed up. But again, we're surfacing information, and these are relatively new with OMS, so more data, more function features should be added as they start to make progress with it. Now, the other bits, you can do lots of things. We've got capacity planning. Some of these do require on-premise infrastructure. So the capacity planning, for example, has a requirement on both operations manager and virtual machine manager on-premise. If you've got both of them, great days. You get even more information and reporting around how your infrastructure is actually doing within your environment. And lots of pretty dashboards to go and show senior management with. And they just go, oh, that's great. Have money, pay for it. Whereas I actually like to see the actual raw stats and see how my infrastructure is actually running at. Seems rather low today. One for me though, security and audit. So if you're going to chuck anything up into OMS to be able to analyze some data from, I really do recommend you look around the security and audit. Microsoft have obviously got a lot of focus at the minute on security. They've just done some acquisitions again, and we're going to see things with threat analytics, etc., for on-premise. I don't know anything, but I'd hazard a guess that that type of information they would love to get into here. This is the type of thing that Microsoft can very easily put against machine learning, do lots of intrusion detection looking at, but this is what we have at the minute, and this is analyzing a lot of the event logs or the security logs for logons, interesting information about who's been added to certain security groups, so I can see at a glance, actually, hang on a second, somebody has been added to a security group in my environment. It seems that I'm here and I should be the only one adding people to domain. Oh, it was me anyway. But you get the idea. You can start to see some of this information. Unless you have some of the tools already on-premise, this is great to add and get a very quick insight into what's going on within your domain environment, see what's been added to different groups. Now, I've got one that I was doing earlier. So SCOM always had a lovely ACS feature. So I'm don't want log management. The ACS feature within SCOM, as we start to look at things with Operations Management Suite, I can do things like start to replicate some of that ACS features and say, well, actually, how many local logons have I had recently? Well, there's me. What have I been logging on to? Put in table mode. Ah, I've been logging on to the SMA server. Now, I know I've been logging on to that because I've been on and off it for the last day or so, trying to actually get some of these demos up and running. So talking about that SMA server, next one I want to talk about is Azure Automation. So that SMA server is the on-premise PowerShell workflow engine that Microsoft brought along with the R2 release of System Center that is starting to be like that evolution of Orchestrator. It's under the Orchestrator banner. Azure Automation is obviously the cloud-hosted version. That's great. Hands up those that know PowerShell. I'll be disappointed if every single person in this room does not put their hand up. If you do not put your hand up and you do not know PowerShell, then go learn it immediately. You need to know PowerShell. PowerShell workflow is a slightly different version. It's taking the concepts of PowerShell, making it very parallel, doing a lot of processing of it. You have to learn about inline scripts. Different session altogether. However, it means that we can make things very resilient, the scripts. We can put checkpoints in them, we can restart them, and it's scalable in the way it does it. However, with what I'm going to show you in a minute, the new portal for Azure, because we're changing from that portal that I've shown all the bits I've been doing in for the previous demos, there is a new portal that's coming along, and we actually now get a graphical interface for Azure Automation. And we'll talk about that. The other cool one is hybrid runbook workers. So great, it's fine. We've got Azure Automation. We can automate lots of lovely things up in the cloud. We can turn VMs on and off. But now we get the ability to reach back into our on-premise, not because of that site-to-site VPN connection, But utilizing OMS and the management agent that's on it, we can actually then designate certain servers that are monitored with by OMS as our hybrid workers, and Azure Automation will basically send your automation script down to your on-premise and execute locally on a server within your infrastructure. Now, this has a couple of benefits because it means that we don't need to actually have the infrastructure for doing the automation on-premise. We can rely and do the authoring and the management and the reporting up in the cloud, but still perform actions on-premise. We'll also be seeing, and it's in preview at the minute, integration with PowerShell desired state configuration, DSC, which means we can start to actually tell servers that this is how you should be configured, we want to make sure the IIS rolls on, you must have this in place, and actually manage that through Azure Automation. Now, for those that have invested in Orchestrator, the good news is Microsoft put some time and effort into, and it's not fully there yet, but they're giving us the ability to start to take them runbooks from the old style Orchestrator and actually move them up into Azure Automation and potentially whatever comes in the next for System Center. So we're getting replacement integration packs, so we're getting modules within Azure Automation, and we will be getting a converter where we can just basically churn through our runbooks and it should give us an output that, don't know what percentage is going to work, but should be almost there with minor tweaks to be able to use within these. And again, my best favorite word, free to use. So you actually get 500 minutes of usage for free without having to pay for anything. And then as soon as you start to ramp up, then you might want to look at actually putting some money into it. So within our OMS, now a lot of this you can get to directly, but I could go to my automation one, see what's going on. Spend your life looking at little spinny progress bars. I'm gonna wait. So it would come up with the tiles, which would then drive you through to the new portal. So I've got the little tab for my automation. Now, I've already created my hybrid worker. I will, in a minute, go back, remove that, and show you how to add it again. But I don't want to annoy the demo gods by removing it, adding it, and then seeing all my scripts fail. So I'll leave it there in place at the minute. That's my on-premise server. Again, there's the DSC bits. I can sign up for the preview now. Jacob did an introduction to Azure Automation today. If you didn't get a chance to see it, watch it on the recordings. He's also doing a deep dive tomorrow. And he was really pleased with me at lunchtime because he had to go through and alter a lot of his slides because I'm sat there going, I can't get this to work. And comes across and goes, well, it's monitored by SCOM. You can't do it. It has to be a direct connected agent. And then we looked at it, and actually, it looks like within the last couple of days, Microsoft have updated the service to allow you to have a SCOM managed and monitored server, which is what I do. I have all my servers with a SCOM agent on, and then have it in the group to upload into Ops Manager, Operations Management Suite. They've now enabled that feature, so you don't have to have a dedicated, non-managed server within your infrastructure. You can just do it within SCOM and actually assign it as a hybrid worker. Anyway, runbooks. So I have a lovely couple of demo runbooks. So talking about the graphical side, because I'm very much a visual person, so this is now the nice new canvas that we have to be able to do stuff with. Let's get rid of that junk. I don't know what that is. Now, we can see down the side, I have my different sets of commandlets. And talking about the migration from Operations Manager, here is one of the modules that this would be the integration pack for VMM within Orchestrator. This is the replacement module. So I now have all the different activities that would have been within Orchestrator that I can then use within Azure Automation. So I might say, well, actually, I want to go and get my VM Cloud. Let me go and find all the VMs that are assigned to that. So you can drag them around. You get the lovely connection things that you're used to within Orchestrator. What do we want to do? We want to see which checkpoints they're on. Have I got to get checkpoint? I must have somewhere. Yes, there's checkpoint. So you can start to string it all together. Now, I'm not going to create a runbook on the fly because anyone that knows anything with Orchestrator, try to do it on the fly and you'll just get all horribly messed up. Now, this obviously gives you lots of different parameters, etc., that you want to do. But for those that haven't experienced the entire PowerShell workflow and the lovely scripts, trying to work out where to use inline scripts, this would be a first start. Especially if you use Orchestrator on-premise, you'll find the shift a lot easier. Now, for the sake of time, I'm going to abandon that one, and I have what you'll probably see as the most powerful runbook to show on-premise integration ever. So I'm going to give it a path. I tell it I want to run it on a hybrid worker. There's my group, so you can have it on multiples, and it'll decide which server it's going to run it on. And I go, go. Go interact with my local on-premise server. So what that will do is, if I find my right server, here it is. I can get these up side by side. There's my job starting now. So it sent the PowerShell script down to my on-premise server. And any second, how's that? I created a file. So yes, it's very basic example. Actually, no, that's the most powerful example. So I'm actually now doing authoring up in Azure Automation, and I'm reaching back into my on-premise. So I don't have to maintain infrastructure for my automation. Microsoft do that for me, but I'm not restricted to just doing stuff in the cloud. Now, really quickly, I promised I would show you how easy it is. Let me just take this out of Azure. Did that run? Nope, now it did. Now, the only reason you'll see me having variables in here is because I didn't really fancy giving everyone my public keys. So within the Azure service, close a few of these. That will update in a minute. So you have this lovely little button. Nope, that lovely little button, keys. So I'm going to show the entire world my keys now. Brilliant. So where it says endpoint, you'll get the endpoint URL from there. And where it says primary key, you'll see the endpoint primary key from there. That's what you need where I've got my tokens. I've just pre-staged them for demo purposes. So it's really easy to go and grab them. You see, it's now dropped that hybrid worker out of the environment. If I come back in here, make sure that your PowerShell module is imported, and then run add hybrid worker, and that will add it back in. So like I say, the only requirement is that this is part of the OMS service. So I've already, pre-ahead of time, gone into Operations Manager. I already had my connection established. So you either have SCOM joined up into OMS, or you go and download the Microsoft Management Agent from the OMS service and install that manually locally. Or you can script it if you want. But you basically register the server with OMS, and then you can do this bit, because it will push down the required files and folders. So you'll notice within program files, Microsoft Monitoring Agent, there is an Azure Automation folder that gets pushed down when it's registered with OMS. That contains all the different registration modules, etc., and the actual agent for doing the interaction with Azure Automation. So this is what runs all of them different runbooks. the PowerShell commandlets aren't exactly overwhelming. You have an add and you have a remove. So it's not really that difficult to extend it into the cloud. And it's back. So you can see it dropped it off, added it back in again. So it's fairly fast. Right, last bit. I promise we can go get beer. Last point. If anyone leaves from this point onwards, I do expect you to come back with a beer for me. So you are allowed to leave, just come back with beer. Azure Remote App. So this is one of the last services I want to talk about. So this is actually taking that approach of running remote desktop services up in the cloud. You can have a cloud-only version where you get Office, or you can have a hybrid option. So I can actually build my own custom image. It will be domain joined. I can have my own apps on it, and I can publish them out. It's going to be easier to show you this. But it also then allows you to start running any Windows application, well, not any, any Windows application you can get working on any device. But you control all these servers with group policy and all the rest. So if you want to create your own custom template, it needs to be less than 127 gig, or it can actually be 127 gig or less. It can only be a VHD file, not a VHDX. Make it dynamic VHD file so it's easier to upload it. but it must be NVR. No Gen 2 VMs, remote desktop session and the desktop feature must be installed. I'm talking really, really quickly. Please read the slide for the longer term. Don't install the remote desktop connection broker. Must disable the EFS. If you build the template in Azure, must rename that file. Sysprep it, but don't use the mode VM, and don't put snapshots on. There's a slightly easier way to do it if you build it in Azure. So, if I go back to my portal, I created a VM earlier, so if you go through the gallery, create a VM from the gallery, there is a pre-done Windows Server Remote Desktop Session Host. So I created that, but very specifically, I added it to my VNet. It's not domain joined, because you don't want to be creating templates with something that is domain joined, but it is on my VNet, which means actually, rather than having to use the lovely little connect button down at the bottom and downloading the RDP file, if I'm really, really lucky, actually I can't do it from my local desktop because direct access isn't rootable up into Azure yet. If I open a PowerShell window, time to go slow. Do inception and go from a VM to a VM to a VM, MSTSC 10.0.1. Remember, that was the range I was using in Azure. .6. I can connect. It's not domain joined to the network, so give it a local admin account. And that's that VM. So I created it, didn't domain join it, but because it is still sat on my VNet, I can still access it from my network without having to go out to the internet and do all the usual. So the only reason for quickly showing you this is when you deploy the template from the gallery, install all your business apps, do whatever you want to it, there is a little script on the desktop that will do all of them validations for you. So this is designed to be able to make very easy templates. So basically, everything is okay, apparently. Can't you zoom in on this one? Do I want to sysprep my VM? Yes, please, crack on. That'll sysprep it, it'll shut it down, and it's ready for using as a template. I'll come back to that later. Once it's been shut down, you can use the capture button. That means that it's going to just purely put into your images. Hey, there's one I prepared earlier. It puts it into your images. You don't have to worry about creating it on-premise and then uploading a massive, huge 20 gig VHD across the internet. It will do it all within the Azure data centers, which makes it a lot quicker, which means then you can come to your remote app node and set up your various different options. So I've already set up a plan, etc., so I can actually choose my local image. It's all ready. But rather than that, let's show a couple of quick things. So these are my Azure remote apps that I have within my environment. Let's make this a little bit cleaner. Direct access has gone down. So these are my different apps that I have. Now, this has always been a feature where you have to have this separate Azure remote app that you download. Users then log it, open it from the icon, they can sign in, and they'll see their apps. I don't know when this came about, but I also did see earlier that it is populating my Windows 10 start menu with these apps, which means from a user perspective, it's absolutely seamless, where I can just go find, I could browse through and find it, but we'll just click on it. I said, we'll just click on it. Now, I'm not using ADFS, I'm just using purely password synchronization, so it gets me to log in, otherwise it should be doing single sign-on. And then like watching paint dry, it should launch the application. So while that's coming up, I also wanted to show. Why is that not opening? So there it is. So this is running in the Azure Remote App Service, up in the cloud, but looking like a local app on my desktop. It also means I can go and browse for a file, so I've got a file there, but this is my custom image on my VNet joined to my domain. I can type in a UNC path, and it'll come back across the internet, back into my local infrastructure. So this file server is located in my office. It's not in the cloud. This is proper hybrid communication. If I, however, open that file and performance on this is usually pretty damn good. It will act and look and feel like it is local app. Now, I've done this over 3G before. It's performed quite admirably. Let me close that because it's been a pain. Yes, I wondered why it wouldn't work. So, if I project my screen on my phone, so you also have, if you don't click random buttons, the ability to have a remote desktop app. It will show you all your apps because I've signed in. I've basically told it, yep, there's my credentials. If I run that same application on my phone, I didn't quit it on my desktop, so this might be interesting. There we go, log me in. Oh, it's actually taken over the session. Well, it did look like it taken over the session. It might have got rid of it. But I can browse around, find that same file. There we go. Try running CAD on a Windows phone. Explode that animation. Off it goes. It's a Windows app on a Windows phone. I could spend far too long playing with this. You get the idea. Right. Seems that all my other consoles have decided to quit. So I left this slide in, and I was hoping to have a lot more information on this by the time we got to today, and we still don't have it. So the only reason for mentioning this is at some point in 2016, we should have this thing called Azure Stack. That lovely new portal that I showed with the Azure automation stuff in, we should be starting to see some of that stuff coming on-premise. So this is where we get all the benefits of managing stuff in an Azure fashion on-premise. We design it once, doesn't matter if we deploy it on-premise or in the cloud. We start to get to almost to this concept of infrastructure as code. So we start to look at using Visual Studio, making very cloud consistent across your on-premise and Azure data centers. Now, slides up there for questions. However, I do appreciate that we've just run over time and there's beer out there. I will be down there. Come and find me. Ask questions if you do have any, but also if I don't walk too far away. So thank you to all our sponsors that we've had. And more importantly, feedback. Please use the apps, use the websites. Give the feedback if you find the session was good or not good and so on. And look out for any surveys. Thank you very much, everybody.